Our nation's 250th birthday is coming up soon, and yet many Americans today do not necessarily appreciate our nation's history and the sacrifices that so many of our founding fathers underwent that we might be free. But one contemporary historian, Jane Hampton Cook, is doing her part to help current Americans appreciate what we have in our nation. She's written books about faith and the history of America, including during the Civil War and the Revolutionary War. Jane wrote an article recently, "This Year, Make a Resolution to Know the American Revolution," in which she says, "As I started researching, I was skeptical. Was George Washington overrated? Are stories from 1776 relevant to life today? How can we relate to people who lived 250 years ago? I cannot explain how deeply transformative studying the American Revolution was for me. It completely changed my understanding of what the United States is all about and how it came to be." End quote from Jane Hampton Cook. She joins us now. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Focal Point. Jane, thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you for this article. And so how did studying about the American Revolution in any way transform your understanding of what it means to be an American?
Well, it was about over 20 years ago when I started writing books, and I had worked at the White House and left the White House to have children and write books. And I thought maybe the American Revolution was kind of overrated. And so I dug in and I decided that I wanted to look at the original sources. I wanted to read what the founders had written in letters, in diaries, in documents, proclamations. And when I focused on what they had to say, I realized how just profound the founding of our nation was, because they were used to living under a monarchy, and the monarchy became tyrannical. And then they stood up for individual liberties and the belief that our rights come from God, not government. And, just seeing how much George Washington gave up, and the special quality about him is that life was not at all about George Washington. It wasn't about him getting glory on the battlefield. It truly was about America winning their independence from England. And if that meant George Washington had to retreat because he needed to preserve his army, he was willing to take a loss for the long-term victory in the end, which is what he did. And he led by example. And there was just no one else like him in that generation who could match his perspective and his big picture look. And he also believed in God and believed in providence, God's providence of, walking with his people. His presence is what providence meant to a lot of the founding generation. And so after I wrote the book Stories of Faith and Courage from the Revolutionary War, I changed a lot about what I wanted to write about. I decided I want to dig in deeper into the first 50 years or so of our country. And so it really did transform me. And I really just hope that Americans will just do one thing to learn about the American Revolution: read a book, watch a movie, watch a documentary, go to a museum, do something to help you remember those stories. And I'm just really excited about 2026 and all the opportunities we have to celebrate our country.
I'm excited too. The one thing I'm, concerned about is the possibility of leaving out the God factor, which I think is extremely important. You found, even in your own research, even if somebody had said, oh, there's stuff about God there in the writings of George Washington, yeah, it's there a lot. In fact, he felt that there were different miracles that God performed, basically favoring the American cause.
Yes, he did. And I looked back to see what George Washington was doing in January of 1776 to sort of think about what was his new year like. And I realized he was laser focused on the goal of getting the British military to evacuate Boston. And he sent Henry Knox, his artillery guy, to go get some cannons from Fort Ticonderoga. And then he placed those cannons on top of Dorchester Heights, and that drove the British out of Boston. And there's a very providential thing that happened, because when the British saw those cannons, their first instinct was to attack. and they got all their guys on ships, and they were going to, you know, thousands of them were going to go attack. And this storm came out of nowhere. They got icy, and they couldn't maneuver their ships, and then they gave up. And George Washington really saw that that was providential. He went to church very shortly thereafter to give thanks to God, because he saw that that storm made a huge difference in their ability. And so just to see those are the kinds of miracles they saw frequently. And George Washington believed that the founding of America and the perseverance of the army was really nothing short of a miracle, which is what he told his troops when he said goodbye after the war was over.
You know, that example you just gave about him going to church or encouraging his troops to do the same, that is not anomalous. I mean, that's not just, it happened once in a while. No, that seems to be a regular thing. For example, in early July of 1776, when he first received, while he was on the battlefield, the Declaration of Independence, one of the first things he did was he ordered kind of a systematic way to have chaplains throughout the different armies, you know, that they had. But also he basically said, you will be expected, all of us, to go to divine service, you know, unless you're providentially hindered. He didn't use that phrase, but that was the idea. You know, if a battle comes up, well, then you don't do it. After the victory at Yorktown, what did he do? He came out with a proclamation and said, let's have service to thank God for this victory and all these victories.
Yes. And even things like when he was at Valley Forge in the spring of 1778, he learned that the French had become our allies. The news had actually, in February of that year, Ben Franklin secured France as an ally, but George Washington didn't find out about it until the spring, until I think May. And when he learned about it, they had a big celebration the next day. And part of that celebration was to give thanks to God. And you see George Washington's letters to different people when he, you know, telling them this news that he was really grateful for this blessing that, you know, God had given them. And that alliance was really crucial because we really needed France's support. And at the end of the war, they were there on sea and blocked the British into Yorktown. They couldn't defeat the French at sea. And then we had them surrounded on land. And that's how we ultimately won the war, was through France's help. And Washington saw that as, you know, Providence smiling upon them.
Yes. In fact, in his first inaugural address, he says nobody should be more grateful than the people of the United States for our independence, because at every single step along the way, God has helped us. I mean, using his own fanciful Baroque terms for God and so forth, that's a summary of what he says. Okay, so talking about the founders in general, not just George Washington, because he was not one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence. He was on the battlefield to secure that the ideas in the Declaration of Independence would prevail. So was it dangerous to sign the Declaration of Independence? The 56 men who affixed their own signatures, was that kind of an act of a bravado?
Well, they knew that they were potentially signing their death warrants. They knew that they would be on the king's most wanted list as signers of the Declaration of Independence. And, you know, I think Ben Franklin was the one who said, you know, if we don't hang together, we must all hang separately. When they adopted the Declaration of Independence. And that was true. They knew how serious it was. And, you know, Samuel Adams and John Hancock were already on the most wanted list by the king. And that happened at the Battle of Lexington in 1775, because he sent his men to try to find Hancock and Samuel Adams. But yeah, it was a big deal. And, you know, they some of them paid a heavy price. I know there are a lot of stories about the founders who signed that declaration. I don't know a lot of the specifics about which one suffered what, but, you know, a lot of them had their homes attacked, and they paid a price for it, for sure.
Yeah, I once did some research on that, and the one area where the founders did lose a lot that did sign the Declaration of Independence was in the realm of property. So, for example, John Witherspoon, who was the president of Princeton. Well, when the British, you know, attacked Princeton, the college, and they destroyed his library. He had brought all these books over from Scotland, and, you know, you couldn't just, you know, replace these things. And then there were other founders, especially in the New Jersey and New York area, mm-hmm. where they were attacking, and oh, this guy signed. Oh, you know, one guy had to kind of, he was sort of chased around and lived in a cave or something for a while. I mean, it was awful, but it was mm-hmm. a price that they paid. Now, I want to listen or read a quote to you from John okay. Adams, one of our founding fathers. And just, I'd like you to remark on this. It's along the lines of what we're talking about here. He says, posterity, you will never know how much it costs the present generation to preserve your freedom. I hope you'll make a good use of it. If you do not, I shall repent in heaven that I ever took half the pains to preserve it. End quote.
Yeah, he was right. You know, he understood the cost of what they had been through. And it was, you know, they knew they were risking all, but they also wanted posterity. He wanted, you know, he was studying the art of war, John Adams was, but he wanted his son's generation to be able to study music and the arts, you know, that we would be so secure that we wouldn't have to study war anymore. And it was, that just points to the attitude of gratitude. You know, we don't have to agree with everything the founders did, but we need to appreciate the gifts that they gave us. And they gave us freedom and liberty and independence and self-government. And we have been a beacon to the world because we adopted that model. And they adopted that model from Moses in the Bible. And they saw that Moses was a Republican type of government, that he, you know, they had the 12 tribes of Israel and the judges, and there was it was a representative type of system. And they really saw that that was a godsend, that that's kind of God's plan for man, is how they interpreted it. And, you know, we've become a strong country and a great country, I think, because we were a grateful country along the way. And John Adams's quote, you know, points to that, you know, finding space to be grateful for the blessings is just really important. And the year 2026 gives us many opportunities to reflect and think on the sacrifices of 1776.
Jane, we have about 2 minutes left here. How do you respond to the attitude you sometimes hear from smug people today who says, oh, the founding fathers were a bunch of dead white guys, and a lot of them owned slavery or slaves, and that's what, you know, protecting their slave rights, you know, was part of the whole point of their independence push?
Well, I think sometimes we think today that they planted a tree of liberty through the Declaration of Independence, but what they did is they planted a seed, and that seed was watered and nurtured and has grown. And you can trace back all the greatest civil rights movements in our history to the seed that was planted with independence. And Prince Hall was a slave who used the Declaration of Independence as a reason why he should be freed in Massachusetts. And he ultimately won his freedom because people saw that the seed of liberty needed to be nurtured and grow. And so I think we sometimes look at, oh, it should have just been a complete, you know, final product, but that's not what happened. It was a seed that has grown, and we have to still water that seed today.
Yeah, I like that. In fact, I had the privilege to write a book, or actually several books, with D. James Kennedy, but when we were working on What If Jesus Had Never Been Born, he once made this observation. We put it in the book that, look, when it comes to civil liberties, it wasn't like something, you know, like that, you know, Athena was born right out of the head of Zeus, you know, in Greek mythology. It was something that had to grow and develop. But once you had that Christian foundation, all men are created equal and are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, then that seed of liberty, as you point out, would grow and grow. Jane, thank you so much for all you do. I know your website is at janecook.com. When your article comes out, we want to have a link to it about this year, make a resolution to know the American Revolution. Jane Cook, thanks so much. All the best.
All the best to you. Thank you.